G'day, I'm Linda Ross and welcome to the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. Thank you for joining me. Wow, I like to go right across Australia and chat to really interesting people about what they're doing in their gardens, in their backyards, and what are their passions in life, I suppose.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
It's a delight to have Claire Bickle with me today. She's an advocate for sustainability and an expert in backyard poultry. She's a voice of organic gardening in southeast Queensland and an all-round great girl. It's a real privilege to have her here with me today. Welcome, Claire.
Thanks, Lenny. Wonderful to be on board.
Thank you. Hey, we've got lots in common, you and I. One of our great things in common is chickens. The other is gin, I think.
Gin in the coop.
gin in the coop. I think today we'll probably just concentrate on chickens. When did your love of poultry start? Has it always been pets with you? Or
I think so. I think my mother sort of curses allowing me to watch the ABC as a child, because I used to watch shows like, you know, All Creatures Great and Small with James Herriot, and, of course, The Good Life.
Oh, you are just the epitome of The Good Life for me.
And hence that's in my website and Facebook page. And she said, I've ruined you. Look at you now. There'll be pigs next. You know? So I've always kind of, as a child, loved animals. And obviously when I grew up, became an adult, got sensible, and I did my gardening and permaculture design courses. It was just a natural progression to go, right, now what's a productive pet besides, you know, cat and dog and so forth, and chickens was it. So sort of from my late teens, early 20s, chickens became a thing.
I've always thought they were pets with benefits.
Exactly. You know, and people don't realise that chickens are not just about, right, I want chickens because I want eggs. You know, they actually do create a wonderful aspect, a living aspect to your backyard, because they do have personalities.
Oh.
And they do become very endeared upon you without you realising it. So, yeah, they are a productive pet, absolutely.
And I suppose they're really part of the cycle of nutrient in a home as well, where the, you know, kitchen scraps can go out to feed the chickens and their droppings go to provide nutrient into the compost, and then that compost therefore goes into the veggie patch and so forth.
Yep, and then round it goes. They're a closed cycle. So if anyone out there is listening that's done a permaculture design course, quite often, you know, Bill Mollison would use the chicken as that example of this integral beastie in your backyard that was that closed cycle, exactly, from taking your kitchen waste to adding it to the compost to producing more food that fed them, and the byproduct, thankfully for us, is the eggs as well. So they are a fantastic, you know, I call them the warriors in the war on waste in your backyard and in your home, even on an urban block you can have a few chooks.
We became interested in chickens, my family, when we decided to do away with the cereal packet.
Yes.
There were slim pickings for breakfast, let me assure you. And so we all decided as a family to get two chickens, Vita and Violet, two Isa Browns, just because it was the beginning of our chicken appreciation and we really didn't know what we were doing, and they seemed to lay the most eggs. As it's kind of worked out now, we have a flock of 13 chickens, and it's a mixed flock who lay all sorts of coloured eggs, and it's rather exciting. What are your favourites? Or breeds of chicken to start with, I suppose?
Obviously a purebred poultry advocate, so probably my favourite top of the pops would be Araucanas. They lay the pale blue shelled eggs. Over the years, I'm lucky enough to be able to have a rooster or two where I am, so I've done a bit of crossbreeding for a bit of fun. So we end up having some what we call olive eggers, so they don't lay the pale blue eggs, but they lay kind of more khaki coloured ones because they've got Araucana in them, but then maybe a bit of Plymouth Rock or something. So Araucanas we adore just because the wonderful colour of eggshell. We've also got French Marens, which are wheated Marens, that lay the darkest of brown.
Oh, yes.
And I find they lay right into the winter. So that's always a bonus as the day's short and a lot of the purebreds go, okay, we're having a break, but these guys keep going. What else do we like? And we, you know what, we do love the Silkies, the Chinese Silkies, and if you're a mad egg eater, they're rubbish because they don't lay a lot of eggs. But we have them for the other aspect, is that they are happy to be handled by the kids. They're very placid in their natures. They don't tear up the garden as readily as some of the larger breeds. So they're probably my three favourites. The egg colours, you know, personalities. It's all part of the mix, I reckon.
Oh, my children dress them up in little clothes and walk them around in prams. They're so genteel chicken to have around. And you're right, they're smaller in size and easy to manage. And I suppose if you had a few, you'd get eggs, you know, semi-regularly. Yeah. But it's obvious about what eggs they lay because they're so much smaller.
Yeah.
I love the buff Orpington. I just think they're the prettiest sort of apricot kind of colour.
They are. We're up in the subtropics, though, and the people further inland have great success with those larger, fuller feathered breeds like the Sussex and the Orpingtons. But on the coast, where we kind of tend to get that combination of heat and the humidity
at the same time,
I've found over the years, and I suppose I've been keeping chickens now for about 25 odd years, is that some of those bigger, fuller feathered ladies, they just can't regulate their body temperature. And that humidity and, you know, the high temperatures when you get in the high 30s, it really knocks them around. So I've sort of started to steer clear of, so I've sort of learnt my lessons over the years, even with all the electrolytes and cold watermelon, you know, I have lost the odd chicken during those kind of weathers. And I know I've got friends out at Warwick, and so that's kind of more inland, and you know, they get the, you know, they get frost, and you know, places in Stanthorpe where they grow cherries, you know, that's still Queensland, but they don't get that humidity, the heat, they get that dry heat, and the chickens seem to fare better with that. Once the humidity's involved, it's harder. But they are, you know, those Orpingtons, you know, that they're beautiful, fluffy bloomer pants, I like to call it.
Oh, they do. They have those lovely bloomers. They're just extraordinary. All right, so when we're thinking of starting perhaps chickens from scratch, can you just go through some of the things that someone would need in their backyard to, you know, for a home, a coop, and perhaps what kind of area a couple of chickens would need?
Okay, so if you're only going to have a couple of chickens and you just completely have no idea where to start, there are so many options for just small, movable housing. There's things like the Omelette brand and so forth. Be aware, though, that I found that some of those flat pack, cheaper ones that you get,
they don't last.
Dirty enough. And I think the key is before you run out and buy chickens, it's a bit like buying plants. You should have the garden ready. The same with chickens. You should have the housing ready to go. And you really shouldn't just slap something together and go, we'll build something better later. Build something better straight away. It has to be predator-proof. I can't bang on enough about that. So that means making sure that foxes can't get in, you know, so maybe think about having a solid floor. Or if you're using one of those movable tractors, at the end of the day, if they've been free-ranging around in one of those, park it onto a paved area or even a piece of ply so nothing can dig in.
Yeah, we have foxes right through Sydney.
Yeah,
with all our little pockets.
I think, you know, I don't think anywhere is free of foxes. And these are wild dogs, feral cats.
Yeah, and powerful owls. Yeah. We have this family of owls that can decapitate hens overnight if they get in, which is terribly distressing.
It's awful. But especially if you've got children, it's kind of really kind of shocking. They don't need that. So it's really imperative to make sure that you've got that housing waterproof, ship type. They also want to have protection from the weather. So, you know, don't have it in the hottest part of the yard. Make sure there's no draft. The other main thing, and I don't know if you guys get them down there as much as we do up here, but we get carpet pythons.
Yeah, right.
They rock and roll for about 10 months of the year. They tend to go dormant in winter, but last summer, just gone, we had a 10-foot carpet snake in our yard. Huge. And they love chickens. You know, they're an easy picking. So making sure that your pens also have what I call small aviary wire, you know, little squares. And make sure it's of a heavy gauge too. If it's soft and flimsy, you know, even your own pet dog will bounce and can damage those sorts of things. So making sure your housing's predator-proof. Chickens will need not very much space to roost at night. They only need about 30 square centimetres because they're just sleeping. But when it comes to having a run or a yard, they need a minimum of 1 to 2 square metres, I say.
And if per chicken.
Yeah, per chicken.
Yeah. I actually was given a cockatoo coop, quite a large bird cage, like big. You can walk into it and I can lock it at night, and it's got the aviary wire, which is great. So that's kind of what we've used for our chickens, and put different roosts up. So some of them, they all have their favourite spot, of course.
Yes, the pecking order.
The pecking order. But I have found that my little mixed flock are quite happy together. And every now and again, I've just got to give a little boot up the bum of the Isa Browns and keep them, you know, friendly. Because they're a little bit of a bitchy chook, aren't they?
Well, yeah, you'll always get that, especially if you don't have a rooster.
Right.
It's a very sexist world, the chicken. Well, the rooster is generally at the top of the pecking order, and he keeps all the ladies in line. And if you don't have a rooster, you'll have a hen that will take on that dominant role. Sometimes those hens can take that role very, very seriously, and they will mock crow. They will even attempt to mate the other female hens. So, yeah, there's always going to be a pecking order, and that's always an interesting thing. And people always ask me about how to introduce new chickens, and it is one of those trial and error things.
Yeah, it can be quite tricky.
Yeah.
I suppose it's all about the age of the chicken in which you're trying to introduce to the flock as well.
Oh, absolutely. You certainly wouldn't be putting in, you know, 6-week chicks into adult sort of pens. You'd have to consider using pointer blaze or something that's big enough to hold its own. And I always say safety in numbers. If you're going to get one chook, can you get maybe introduce two at the same time?
Oh, yeah, I always buy in twos.
And then also, too, if it's possible, you know, having them within an enclosure, or say, for example, your setup, if you had a smaller pen right next to your main one, where the old girls can see the new ones, but they can't touch them. And do that for a couple of weeks before you bring them in, and then eventually they might just go, oh, that's those two chickens we've been looking at for weeks, boring, you know.
That's exactly what I do. It's a little bit like Noah's Ark here, where I bring them in two by two. But I found these, and I've have a little bit of an addiction. I'm sure there's a group that I can go to and talk about my chicken addiction.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just went past my little shop the other day, and I always pop in and have a chat to my chook lady, and she had the most spectacular black with white spotted chickens.
Oh, the Hamburgs?
The Hamburgs.
Yes.
And see, my sister-in-law grew up in Hamburg. She's German. And so I thought, I have to get these two chickens, these Hamburg chickens, and I've called them Gitta and Nicole, her mother and her friend's name. But they're just divine. They're like Dalmatian.
Yeah, they are. And you know what? You can get they call them silver spangled Hamburgs.
Oh, yes.
And then there's actually gold spangled. So you can get ginger ones with spots.
Oh, I must go and see those. So I had to bring those two girls into my already quite happy little flock, and that's exactly, because I needed them, exactly. It wasn't anything to do with eggs. They were just so pretty. And so I put them in a small chicken. In fact, I think it was a rabbit hutch, and they stayed there for weeks and weeks until everybody got used to each other.
Yeah.
Right. And, yeah, it worked out really, really well. And now I think I'm at my capacity. But what can gardeners do, Claire, to perhaps grow food that chooks need in their diet rather than just concentrating on grains or bagged feed?
Yeah, so chickens will obviously need a complete poultry feed because it's full of all those carbohydrates, minerals and so forth, shell grit and so forth. But chickens actually really need quite a large percentage of greens in their diet as well.
Yeah.
And that's full of vitamin A, and that is probably the main thing that colours up yolks, that gives them that vibrant yellow, is eating greens. So there are things you can grow yourself that all of those bitter herbs, so sorrel, chicory.
Dandelion, you know, I suppose,
all of those. Comfrey, chickens love comfrey. There are even
Do they?
Yeah, so even there are some companies that even do up seed mixes called Clucker Tucker, you know, that you can easily
sow
and sow those in seed trays. There are other ways to do it too, to administer these greens to them, and that is, and I've seen this great idea, and it's going to be hard to explain on podcast, but basically getting, say, 10 or so Besser blocks and creating a rectangle, and then, you know, and then sowing the seed within that rectangle, but over the top, then putting a piece of fencing mesh. So the greens will grow up through there.
Yep.
The chickens can peck at it, but they can't scratch it all up.
Yes, quite right, so they keep regrowing.
Yeah, because quite often you'll sow these greens for the chickens and cordon it off, and then in their run, for example, and then you'll let them at it. And, like, it's taken you 6 weeks to grow, and then they've demolished it in 30 seconds. You think, oh, that was a bit of a waste of energy. But this way they can peck at it down to a certain level, but at least the plants aren't scratched clean out of the ground. So at least they get a few goes at those types of picking greens. So, yeah, there's barley, there's lucerne, there's all sorts of different things you can grow for chooks. And I always talk about growing smelly things for your chickens as well. So things like wormwood, rosemary and lavender, not so much to eat, but to put in their nesting boxes.
Oh, really?
And the oils from those herbs act as a wonderful deterrent for a lot of those external parasites like mites and lice and so forth.
Oh, then everything would smell like lavender too.
Pretty. Scented geraniums are great as well.
So. Oh, that's a great idea. I might do that this afternoon.
So you have pretty nesting boxes.
Oh, that's great.
That are functional.
I mean, in their coop, of course, I just put out some sawdust regularly.
Yep.
And then, you know, every, you know, 3 months I would probably dig all that out, put that all into the compost
yep.
bins and then freshen up their nesting boxes in their coop. But that's a great idea in their nesting boxes, a little bit of wormwood. I mean, wormwood has a wonderful repellent quality for pests anyway, doesn't it?
That's right.
Excellent. Oh, I knew I had you for a reason, had you on for a reason. Fantastic.
There's even this new stuff too called hemp bedding. So it's derived from hemp plant, not the, you know, the recreational drug hemp, but the clothing hemp. And that's also apparently really fantastic for repelling a lot of those external parasites that know that chickens come and sit in those nesting boxes to lay, and they take it as an opportunity to jump on. So the hemp bedding I've heard a lot about too. I haven't used any myself yet, but I thought, right, that's my mission this coming out of winter. I'm going to get some hemp bedding and try that out too.
It's a good idea to, you know, if you're thinking of having chooks, you know, to think through the winter, okay, in the winter I can prepare
yes.
the coop and their run and so forth, and then perhaps in the springtime get the chickens. Is there anything else that we as, you know, chicken lovers can be doing to boost the health and I suppose the immune system of our chickens?
Absolutely. And funnily enough, in winter, when your chickens are generally off the lay, they actually need to eat more during the winter time. And so during wintertime, it's great to sort of give them feed, say, in the morning, and then access to greens throughout the day. But right towards the end of the afternoon or when you get home from work, give them all a small kind of handful, you know, a few handfuls of cracked corn, because they'll eat that in the late afternoon and they'll kind of go to bed at night with that corn in their belly. And that helps keep them warm through colder weather.
So oh, that's a great idea too.
So that's kind of handy. When it comes to sort of, you know, natural health care of chooks and so forth, adding things like garlic and apple cider vinegar to their sort of, you know, weekly diet and to their water will actually change the intestinal, well, the apple cider vinegar will change the intestinal flora of the gut, making it less habitable for intestinal worms to get a foothold. So, and garlic has a similar effect. And garlic also, must be the sulfur in the garlic, I think, gets into the system of the chicken, and it also acts as a deterrent for worms as well as external parasites. And you can just administer garlic as chopped garlic. You can do it in their water. A lot of people say to me, are the eggs going to taste like garlic? It's like, no, I think you have to give the chickens like 12 cloves of garlic each per day before you end up with a wrong-tasting pavlova. But, yes, garlic and apple cider vinegar can go in there, and that can actually help, you know, maintain the health of your chooks too.
That's a fascinating idea and something that I haven't done before, so I'm definitely going to get onto that. I do make my own yogurt just for the family, and when there's some left over, I cannot tell you how crazy those chickens go for yogurt.
Absolutely. You can give any yogurt, even yogurt that's slightly on the turn,
yep.
you can give to chooks as well. And a lot of people, if you want to be really, really mollycoddling your chickens, you can, especially in wintertime, is to make up like a really nice oat mix for them, and you can add some natural yogurt through that as well, and even a bit of fruit or whatever takes your fancy. So you can make the ultimate breakfast for your chickens as well.
I'm really going to start mollycoddling these chickens a little bit more. And in the summertime, when it's hot and steamy and temperatures are hitting the 40s, what can we do there to cool the chickens down?
Okay, so obviously, you know, Australia's just hot full stop everywhere. Up here, obviously, we get the humidity tacked onto that as well. Maybe we don't reach as high temperatures, but it sure feels like it because of that ambient water moisture in the air. So your chickens feel it too. As I mentioned before, they can't regulate their body temperatures. And believe it or not, chooks do quite well in really cold weather. You'll see them traipsing through the snow and they cope with that. But the heat is another whole ball game. And so if you know, you know, they're forecasting, you know, it's going to be a heat wave, we're going to have those extreme temperatures. What I do is I actually get some empty plastic water bottle containers or milk cartons, fill them up with water, jam them in the chest freezer and get them to freeze. And I kind of do away with their everyday drinkers. And I have some big tubs that aren't too deep, so no one's going to fall in and drown. But I do put some bricks in there anyway. And in the morning, I run down there, fill those up, and then I actually float those big kind of ice bottles in the water. And that just keeps that water temperature down. Quite often, I'll find we have a pair of turkeys, and whenever we get that kind of hot weather, the female just goes and stands in that tub of water.
Wow.
She must know that helps reduce her core body temperature. Other things you can do is to make sure, some people will set up little mister sprinkler systems in their chook runs. You can do things like that. Make sure that they've got access to that cool, clean drinking water. I let mine free range, and so I let them find their cool spots. And quite often your chickens will have their favourite spot to have their dust baths in.
Yeah.
Find that, know that spot, and go and hose it. You know, hose that area down well, because they will actually try and dust bath in that cool, moist earth also to reduce their body temperatures. And you can do up frozen treats. So frozen, you know, Chinese takeaway containers with corn in them, or ice cube trays filled. Ice cubes I find thaw out too quickly. You know, even ice cream buckets with fruit frozen in it, and tip those out for them to peck at it. Once again, ingesting that icy cold fruit helps reduce, bring down that core, even cold watermelon. And if you're really worried, and if you, like for me, if I had any big girls, like the big Alpingtons and so forth, you know, in the past, I've had electrolytes on hand.
Okay.
You can actually buy electrolytes for them, because you can see a chook that's getting heat stroke. If you do see a chicken, they look like they've had a few too many gins. They start to wobble. Their pupils are dilating and shrinking in, and they're getting too hot. Bring them straight inside, if you can, to an air-conditioned room in a box. Just keep them cool and don't give them that electrolytes and so forth. So there's a few different things you can do.
So I've got a run for my chickens. So they've got quite a big area under a gigantic Chinese elm tree.
Yep.
So they're always cool, and
that's great.
But I'm reticent to actually let them free range into my veggie patch or garden, just because I feel like they just jump up and start eating all the veggies straight out of the garden.
Oh, no, they'll dig everything to pieces.
Yeah.
We actually have our vegetable garden completely fenced off.
Yeah. That's so probably what I need to do.
Yeah, so we're out and they can go berserk if they want to. I have found my female turkey, a bit like the bush turkey, she's big enough to get up and over and into the garden.
Yeah.
So I have to keep an eye on that, because she seems to have a penchant for my sorrel plant as well. And I always know when she's been in and gotten out before I've sprung her, because my sorrel plant's been, you know, abused.
But I understand why. I totally get why, because sorrel's so delicious.
It is.
Hey, you talk about turkeys just there, sort of an integrated flock. What other kind of poultry works with chickens?
Well, we generally, we've always kept our turkey and guinea fowl separate from the chooks, because the chickens have a particular, you know, particular parasites and so forth that can affect turkeys and guinea fowl and give them a disease called blackhead. So we kind of keep them separate. We don't have guinea fowl at the moment. But I do also have ducks and geese. They are also in their own pen, just because waterfowl foul up the water really fast, because they like to dabble in the mud, dabble in the water, dabble in the mud, and chickens can't cope with that kind of dirty water. So we do have chooks. The chooks have their own space. The pair of turkeys have their own setup, and then the ducks and geese are together. And we've actually got our ducks and geese set up so that their main gate to let them free range, goes straight into our orchard.
Oh, that's wonderful. They do really eat so many of the little pests
and
slugs and snails.
That's the joy of waterfowl. With their webbed feet, they don't scratch, so they're not digging up anything. But they're keeping the weeds down, they're eating all the pests, they're keeping the grass down as well. So, and the whole time they're walking around, they're fertilising the garden, which is fantastic. So that's why we have them.
You are an absolute encyclopedia of information, Claire Bickle. I tell you what, just to end off with our chicken podcast today, I just want to know, do chickens get bored? Should I be giving them more things to sort of do during the day?
Absolutely, absolutely. There are lots of boredom busters, and bored chickens are a bit like bored dogs. You know, they can get up to mischief, like things like start bullying each other, eating their own eggs, you know, doing all sorts of naughty things. So you can get things. There are things called pecker blocks, which are like, you know, salt licks for horses.
These are
mineral blocks for chickens. And you can throw one of those in there, and it takes them weeks to peck through one of those, so that keeps them busy. Also, people will use seed balls, a bit like the ones you use for wild birds, and hang those up. People I know also string up cobs of corn, you know, whatever.
Oh, yes.
The kind of in season. There's lots of corn about cheap. Get half a dozen of those and string them up and have it hanging, because I've got to peck at it, and it swings around, and it takes up time and keeps them busy. And I also hang up bunches of greens. And I always make them just a little bit high, so they've got a jump.
Now, that's slightly cruel, but I think an excellent idea. Okay, so my final question. Chicken swings, yes or no?
Oh, yeah, I reckon. It's just something else you're going to have to clean, though. You know, have to keep that in mind. they'd boo on us. But yeah, why not?
Why not? Keep them swinging through the day. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
No worries.
Claire, it's always such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for your time. That was the lovely Claire Bickle. You can connect with Claire on her Facebook page, Claire Bickle Gardening for the Good Life. What a great title. Or on Instagram. I think the name is the same. Lots of wonderful information. And I'm off to make a seed ball and hang cobs of corn in the coop this afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Garden Clinic podcast today. Lovely to have your company. Head over to the Garden Clinic Facebook page if you've got any trick questions for me. And otherwise, I'll see you all again next week. This has been Linda Ross. Happy gardening and go safely.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.